Okay, so we're diving into Minersville School District vigo bitis. You've brought some really interesting legal docs and historical context on this one, and I think it gets to the heart of something that every lawyer you know kind of grapples with, right? Individual liberty versus state power.
Yeah, and what's so interesting about gobitis is it takes us back to 1940. Think about it. The U.S. is on the edge of World War II. Patriotism is surging. This need for national unity is kind of, shaping everything.
And right in the middle of that, you've got the gobitis family, Jehovah's Witnesses, who refused to salute the flag in school because their faith saw it as idolatry. It was forbidden, and they were willing to be expelled for it.
It's easy to forget the human cost of these cases, right? I mean, Lillian and William Gobitis were just 12 and 10 years old, and they essentially lost their right to a free public education because of their beliefs. And you can imagine the pressure on them and their family, who had to figure out how to pay for private schooling.
I'm really struck by the fact that this case went all the way to the Supreme Court. I mean, the lower courts initially sided with the Gobitis family. They acknowledged their right to religious freedom. What changed when it went up to the Supreme Court?
Well, the Supreme Court, in an 8-1 decision, ruled against the Gobitis family. And Justice Frankfurter's majority opinion is really important here. It's a classic example of judicial restraint. Frankfurter basically argued that in times of crisis, and remember, this is with a war on the horizon, right? National unity outweighs individual claims. He felt the court should defer to the legislature's judgment.
Judicial restraint. So it's almost like the court is saying, this is too hard to handle. We're going to let the lawmakers figure this one out. But did they even consider the impact on this family?
Well, and that's a good point. It goes to the heart of this secular regulation doctrine. Frankfurter applied it here. So the law that required the flag salute, it wasn't designed to target any one religion. Its goal, promoting patriotism, was secular. So any burden on the Jehovah's Witnesses' faith was considered, quote unquote, incidental.
But incidental feels like a stretch, doesn't it? Because their lives were fundamentally changed. This wasn't just some abstract burden.
You're absolutely right, and that's where Justice Stone's lone dissent comes in, and it's a really powerful dissent. He argued that forcing kids to salute the flag, even for something like patriotism, is a form of coercion and it violates the First Amendment. Stone believed that there were other ways to encourage national unity without forcing students to, violate their deeply held beliefs.
And Stone didn't hold back. He said, "The Constitution is an expression of faith that freedom of mind and spirit must be preserved." And it's a chilling reminder, I think, of what's at stake when the government starts dictating what people have to believe or express.
It is, and that's a really important statement for lawyers to understand, because it really gets to the heart of this tension in the case, right? When does the government's interest in, say, social order overstep an individual's right to freedom of conscience?
So the Supreme Court prioritized national unity, seemingly at the expense of individual liberty. What happened next? I mean, did the country just rally around the flag and forget about the Gobitis family? I think a lot of people would just assume that a Supreme Court decision, especially with an 8-1 majority, would be kind of the end of the story, right? Like, that's it, it's decided.
Yeah, you would think, right? But Gobitis actually led to a pretty significant backlash. There was a wave of violence directed at Jehovah's Witnesses all across the country. So the decision, instead of unifying the nation, it seemed to actually cause even more division and intolerance.
Wow. So much for that idea of promoting unity through, forcing people to do something. It seems like the court maybe didn't fully grasp the potential fallout from their decision.
Yeah, it definitely raises questions about when judicial restraint goes too far, right? If you've got these fundamental rights at stake, should the court really just defer to what the lawmakers say, even when it seems like there's a crisis?
That's a really tough question.
Mm.
And it makes you think, was the court influenced by the fact that there was a war coming? Did they worry that protecting individual rights might, I don't know, make the country look weak or divided right when they needed to project strength?
It's certainly possible, right? And it's important to remember Gobitis didn't stand for very long. Just 3 years later, it was overturned in another landmark case, West Virginia State Board of Education v. Barnett.
Wait, the Supreme Court actually reversed itself that quickly? That's pretty rare, isn't it? There must have been a really compelling reason for such a dramatic shift.
Yeah, there were a few things going on. First, the court's makeup had changed. Two new justices, who were much more focused on protecting individual rights, had joined the bench.
So sometimes it's just about who's on the court, huh? Like, personnel changes can really shake things up.
Yeah.
I guess it's a reminder that the Supreme Court, it's not this like faceless entity. It's made up of people with their own viewpoints and values.
Exactly. And it wasn't just who was on the court. You also have to consider the broader context, what was happening in society. The backlash against Gobitis, the violence against Jehovah's Witnesses, all of that contributed to this growing sense that the court had gotten it wrong.
It's interesting how public opinion can influence the court, even though it's supposed to be independent. I guess it shows the power of dissent, speaking up when you see something that's unjust.
Absolutely. And there was another big factor, the war itself. By 1943, the U.S. was fully involved in World War II, fighting against fascist regimes, regimes that demanded absolute conformity. So the idea of suppressing dissent at home while fighting against totalitarianism abroad, well, it struck a lot of people as pretty hypocritical.
I see. So the war, which you could argue initially pushed the court toward prioritizing unity, ended up showing everyone why protecting individual liberty is so important.
Exactly. The war really changed how people thought about individual rights, even in times of crisis.
So Gobitis gets overturned by Barnett. Does that mean that's the end of the story? Or is there more to it?
Well, the legal fight over the Pledge of Allegiance kept popping up in different ways over the years, and believe it or not, some of Frankfurter's arguments about judicial restraint, they actually got revived decades later by Justice Scalia in Employment Division v. Smith.
Wait, hold on. Are you saying a case from 1940 had an impact on legal thinking in 1990? That's amazing.
It really shows how much power legal precedent has and how some ideas just keep coming back, even as the world changes around them. Smith was about something different, the use of peyote in Native American religious ceremonies. But Scalia's majority opinion, it echoed Frankfurter's focus on judicial restraint. He said that courts shouldn't be second-guessing the legislature when it comes to laws that apply to everyone, even if those laws end up putting a burden on certain religious practices.
So even though Gobitis was overturned, its legacy kind of lived on in these debates about religious freedom.
In a way, yeah. It shows this ongoing struggle between protecting individual rights and giving the legislature the power to do its job. These are tough issues. There are no easy answers. And as you can see, the court has gone back and forth on them over time.
I can definitely see why Gobitis, even though it was overturned, is still considered a landmark case. It opened up all these really deep legal and philosophical questions that we're still trying to figure out today.
That's right. And it reminds us that legal precedents aren't static. They get reinterpreted, applied to new situations, and what they mean to us can change over time. Gobitis serves as a warning about the dangers of letting the majority have too much power, especially when national security is part of the equation.
Yeah, it seems like every generation has to deal with these questions about where to draw the line between individual rights and what the government says it needs to do. So what should lawyers, or anyone who's really studying this case, take away from all of this?
Yeah.
It feels like with Ubitus, there are just so many things to think about. Where do we even start to apply this to, the law today?
I think the biggest takeaway from Gobitis, especially for lawyers, is that law isn't just about big ideas, It's about people.
Yeah, it's about the Gobitis family, those
Yeah.
two kids who stood up for what they believed in, even if it meant, giving up their education.
Exactly. And it's about Justice Stone, who was willing to say, "No, I disagree," even when everyone else on the court was against him.
Yeah, it just shows you that dissent can be powerful,
Yeah.
even when it's just one voice.
Absolutely. And that's why Barnett is so important, right? It shows us that things can change, that what the court decides one day isn't necessarily the final word. The court can look at what's happening in society, listen to public opinion, and actually say, "Hey, we made a mistake."
So looking back on all this, what's the big lesson here? What should lawyers, or really anyone who's learning about this case, take away from this deep dive?
I think Gobitis and Barnett together, they show us this constant tension in our legal system, how to balance individual rights with what the government says it needs to do. And they remind us that the courts have a really important job in figuring all of that out.
It feels like Gobitis is kind of a warning sign, right? Like, be careful about giving the government too much power, even if they say it's for national unity or security.
Yeah, and it also shows how important judicial review is. The idea that the courts can step in and say, "Hold on, the legislature went too far here. We need to protect people's rights."
It's amazing how this one case, Minersville School District v. Gobitis, just opens up all these other discussions. Makes you think about precedent, the impact of, what's going on in the world at the time, and this constant back and forth between individual liberty and the needs of the state.
Yeah, it's a case that people are still talking about all these years later because it gets at some really fundamental questions like, who who are we as a society and what are our core values? So, you know, as you go forward, whether you're arguing a case in court or just having a conversation about what's happening in the world today, remember the Gobitis family. Remember Justice Stone and that dissent.
Remember that protecting individual liberties is an ongoing fight and that we all have a part to play in that.
That's a great way to put it. It's a responsibility that every lawyer carries to stand up for what's right, even when it's hard, even when you're standing alone.
Well, thanks for joining us for this deep dive into a really important moment in legal history. It's a reminder that the law is always changing. It's shaped by the people and the times we live in. Until next time, keep asking questions, keep learning, and keep fighting for what you believe in.